You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A New York City Thanksgiving's Eve party, an island in Maine, and a 300-acre farm in the Adirondacks are just a few of the settings in Tom Barbash's new collection of short stories. But although these places may be far apart geographically, the collection called Stay Up With Me ties together themes of loss, love, the consequences of a lapse of judgment, and the struggles to move on. Dave Eggers has called it one of the most satisfying cover-to-cover short story collections I can remember. It's published by Echo, and I'm very pleased that it brings Tom Barbash to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Your first book was a novel. Usually people start off with short stories. But yours was the novel The Last Good Chance. The second was On Top of the World, which was nonfiction. Now this collection of short stories. Do you mix and match your literary projects?
Yeah, I tell my students that what I like being and what I want them to be is sort of men and women of letters, and how if you my background as a journalist helps me as a novelist in terms of my ability to get out into the world. And someone taught me how to write a clean sentence a long time ago, and so I think those are translatable. And then I think also to be a fiction writer and working in nonfiction means you can tell a more dramatic story. So
most of the stories here take place in New York, or at least on the East Coast, but you live in Marin County in California, don't you, outside of San Francisco?
Yeah, I suppose my body lives in Marin and my head still in New York when I work every day.
I was going to ask, does that suggest that you're missing the East Coast?
What I always say is when I come back here, I miss it because I get this sort of adrenaline rush and I feel completely at home in New York. When I'm there, I love being there, but I'm drawn back to the city and I feel very, very comfortable here.
Many of these stories revolve around New York cultural staples, like the night when they inflate the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade balloons and watching people jog around Central Park Reservoir from an Upper East Side apartment. Were those images that got you thinking about those stories?
Oh, Central Park was nature for me, you know, and other people I know talk about beautiful places they'd been. My father would walk us out into Central Park, and that was as if we were looking at the most beautiful mountain and bucolic place. So, and it's always been a rich place for me and a rich place for me to return in terms of storytelling.
And the balloons, that's something that a lot of people tried to be able to witness. If you live in the area, I guess it's a lot easier.
Yeah, it's sort of our Mardi Gras. Literally, every single building has parties up and down. And people move from party to party, and they're lists with the doorman, and it's such a great thing to be on one of those lists. I guess we were because we were giving the party. But the thing about it, too, is we stopped having to invite people. People just knew that we'd have the party, and they'd show up, and the strangest people would show up from your past. And so that idea that there would be no way to stop it even if you wanted to became that's where I got the idea for Balloon Night.
Many of your characters are writers, the jealous single mother in the Break, the biographer in Denial about the failings of his relationship in Balloon Night, the tired screenwriter in the title story. Don't writing teachers, and I know you teach writing, but don't writing teachers warn their students against writing about writers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is maybe not to be writing about a writing class. But my mother was a writer and editor, and she figures, the characters are different than she is, but she's an important part of what I want to write about.
Timken, the main character in Balloon Night, had a habit of trying to guess the sentence his girlfriend last read when she left her books and magazines around the house. That seems like a detail only a writer would care about.
Well, I guess there are clues to the fact that, and there are clues that Timken's trying to figure out why his wife has walked out on him, and that's one of them. There's a series of other ones, and I think the reader is maybe a step ahead of Timken in terms of figuring out what might have happened.
You write about what you describe as the parched badlands of a writer's block in Stay Up With Me, the title story, and the temptations that can arise when someone is trying to work through that. In this case, the offer of a drink by an ex-girlfriend felt like, quote, a sugar rush, apt to raise his spirits for an hour or so before dropping him into a prolonged crash. The obvious question is, do you go through periods of writer's block?
Well, that one actually is not writer's block for Henry in that story. He hasn't had sex in a while, and so this is a chance. But I have
that's a form of writer's block.
Yeah, and they might be tied together.
Another kind of dry spell.
Yeah, I mean there's stretches of productivity and stretches where life just takes over and it's hard to get there.
You ever envy the writers who just turn out their quota pages every day?
I do, and I envy even earlier Tom Barbash's. You know, I mean, of years ago when I'd have a very productive stage, and then now I'm in a less productive state. I envy that previous version of myself.
Well, some writers wind up retiring, like Philip Roth. He just doesn't see any more stuff coming to him. But most writers, there's always something that's niggling away in the back of their brain. And I guess that's why the short story form is so popular.
Yeah, I others have said it, but when you're done with a big project, there's a longing to do, or for me, to return to short stories. And now that this collection's done, I'm working on a novel, and I love going back and forth. I love both. They're so different, but I get deep satisfactions out of both forms.
The first-person narrator in your story, The Women, is an assistant producer at a public radio show. He uses metaphors like, the buzzing in my ears was constant now, like the static on a radio station that only partially comes in, or a wiring defect on a speaker that you might eventually get used to. Well, have you ever worked in radio?
I did. I had. I was an intern at WBAI a long time ago, and that experience of, and I remember the elevators I'd have to go up on. I worked on the weekends, and so that was the source of that.
The freight elevator on the side of 35th Street.
Right, right.
I have to break this to you. Everybody, even the people at regular shows, were interns at WBAI. I know. I was there for 8 years.
So I'm in good company.
This character, Andy's psychological struggles often come through in his hearing, the buzz in his therapist's office, the thinking he's going deaf when he gets overwhelmed about his father moving on after his mother's death. Does he keep his headphone volume level up? Is that one of the reasons why he's getting all that buzzing in his ears?
I think it's more it's could be, but they're manifestations of things he hasn't quite dealt with, and they're playing their way out physically on him. So.
My guess is Tom Barbash, his latest book is a collection of short stories called Stay Up With Me. It is published by Echo. Many of the stories are about loss, like moving on after the death of a loved one or the end of a marriage. What leads you to keep on returning to that?
Well, I think in a lot of the cases the character hasn't quite processed it, and so what I would think, I am actually advocating in a sense for denial or for the sort of emotional resourcefulness of my characters. In a sense, you could write a story about someone who fully processes loss and is very depressed and then stays in bed all day, or you can have someone like Timken who decides to have a really good party. Or a lot of the characters, they're not quite there yet, and as a result, they're driven to do odd things.
In The Women, a son has a hard time watching his father become a ladies' man after his mother has died.
Yes, and that is based on a party a week after my own mother died of watching around 10 women surround my father, my very attractive, successful father, and having him, he'd been completely devoted to my mother, but completely enjoying that experience.
And then you have in Howling at the Moon, a young boy who's lost both a father and a brother, witnessing his mother trying to work through her own grief through a new romantic relationship.
Yeah, and his new siblings have been sort of more successful at being adolescents and now teenagers, and then people in their 20s than he's been. And there's a kind of sense that there's a sort of language he doesn't know. There's something he should have learned along the way that he hasn't quite learned yet.
But he's also dealing with guilt because he played a role in his brother's death.
Correct. And that's sort of a secret, but he lets it out. He doesn't even plan to, but he tells him in the beginning of the story that this has happened. And so they see him as wounded in a way, but they really want to take care of him in many ways too. There's a sweetness between his new siblings and him.
You look at these kinds of things from all sorts of different angles. In The Break, a mother has trouble dealing with her son's relationships after she puts her marriage on hiatus.
Yeah, someone asked me about the sort of the timeliness of the collection, and I sort of feel as I get older that there's a lot of generations of people in their 40s and 50s and 60s that still feel like kids. And so what happens if their grown kids actually in some ways are sort of more responsible and observant than they are and can see into their problems in a way that becomes problematic in a way, I guess, to have a really sentient and smart son or daughter.
I mentioned that your first published work was a novel. Was that the first book you wrote?
That's my first book, yeah.
Because people usually start, as I mentioned earlier, the other way around, and you're usually encouraged to start with short stories, build up your chops, and then tackle the big one, the novel.
Yeah, I had written stories, and then for me, I was in graduate school, and I felt every time I would write a story, I would binge write, and then I'd have nothing to do for a little bit, and then I'd binge write. And I looked at the novelists as people who sort of got up and they had their oatmeal or granola, and then they did their 4 hours of work, and then they went for a run and had a nice dinner, and they seemed to have a nice pattern to their lives. So I really wanted to write a novel so that I could have a better pattern to my life. And I did, but for 6 years. So.
You also won an award for that novel, The Last Good Chance. And some of your writing has been performed on Selected Shorts.
That was one of the most fun experience I've ever had as a writer.
A much better radio experience than working at WBAI.
it was to have an actor, Tom Cavanaugh, who's a wonderful actor, read it. And if I don't have enough money to send Tom on the road, but if I possibly could have him read all my stories, I think that would be much better for me.
So the new novel, is it a departure, or is it on some of the similar themes to what we have in these stories?
The new novel is set in New York.
Of course.
In the year 1980, and it's actually set in the Dakota, in the year that John Lennon is assassinated. It's a family living in the Dakota.
Tom Barbash's latest collection, well, his only collection of short stories, which have appeared in a number of the kinds of publications you'd expect, McSweeney's, Virginia Quarterly. Where else?
One Story, Tin House, a variety of others, Narrative.
And it has been published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. Really.